Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Dao from Third Culture Vietnam. Welcome to the podcast, Dao.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kenneth. This is a really cool experience.
My pleasure. I have so many questions for you. I've been following your work with Third Culture Vietnam. And, you know, let's start with your name. Dao is a really cool name. It reminds me of religion, Tông Giáo, the Way, the Dao, all of that. And we talked about how you now being in Vietnam, you're able to actually pronounce the way it's meant to sound.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting, right? When I meet people now in Vietnam, I say Dao the right way. And, you know, growing up in the States, I was like, oh, this is Dao, you know, and I don't enunciate or pronounce it because, yeah. You know, maybe they don't really understand it, but it's great to finally like accept it and be proud of like the accent and how to say it correctly and the meaning of it, you know? I mean, for Dao, the full name is Wen Zhong Dao, and my parents named me the Path of the Buddha, the middle path, you know? And I think it's great to really like own it now, you know?
Yeah, and that's significant of so many other things. That's like the tip of the spear with so many other things about moving to Vietnam as a Vietnamese person. You know, you're not only seeing everybody around you who look like you, who kind of like speak the same language and can call your name correctly. You know, there's a quiet confidence that comes with that territory.
Yeah. For me specifically, right, I grew up in the States, but my younger childhood was in Minnesota, where I grew up with people just constantly mispronouncing my name, right? It was usually Dale. And that does something to a kid, right? You begin to internalize it, and then you begin to kind of just accept that, okay, I guess it is what it is, and that's my name, you know? But now, living in Vietnam, like, if I don't say it right, they're like, Yao, Dao, you know, all this other stuff, like, oh, and it's Dao. And I think it's beautiful that I'm able to like really, really just accept it, honor where my name came from and like the meaning of it. It's dope, you know?
You know, your name can go at least four different ways, right? In the meaning of four, five, six different ways. And if what you just said about it does something to you, I reflect about this quite a bit in my life in the last 5 years of the work that I do, that fortunately we got this wonderful opportunity to grow up, be born in America and really reap the benefits of what America has brought to our existence. But at the same time, you think about, like when you go to Vietnam a lot and you live there like you think about being snatched away from the roots of who you are. And I'm not talking just like from a framework of language and culture and tradition, but you know, our bodies are meant to be in the heat. It's meant to exist in the hot climate, all of these things. You know, I have uncles that in the wintertime here in LA, their bones start to hurt, and you know, whatever that is, I don't know if it's a psychological thing, but they get back to Vietnam and all of that aching goes away. And you know, my family, we talk about how, you know, we're not cold climate people.
Yeah,
but it's all of those things, attributes that I think about.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny that how you speak about it in a physical sense.
Yeah,
but coming back and like, I guess like just rooting yourself, there's a spiritual sense to it, right? For me at least, is I've been growing up with this like heaviness that I can't explain. But for me to go back to Vietnam and live here for like 4 years now, right? This, it just feels like it's been released. I mean, as I'm close to 40 now, I feel the aches, right, physically. But now I just feel like there's like this weight off my shoulder of like understanding what it is to be Vietnamese. There's no right or wrong way. Yeah. You know, we all have our own relationship to Vietnam, either good, bad, sad, you know, damaged. But, you know, I think it's very important for people like me and you to have this conversation, you know, and share our experiences, share our stories, and sharing our way back to Vietnam, what is home?
Let's take it back.
Yeah.
How did you, when did you first go to Vietnam? And then tell me about the journey of actually moving to Vietnam.
Yeah, I this is something that we kind of talked about, you know, during our heritage tour last March, right? But a lot of people grow up with this connection or this non-connection to Vietnam. We hear about it in stories. For me, it was always this home that I never had a connection to. You know, I grew up in the States, right? For me, it was like late 2022 after COVID, things like that, where I just felt like, you know, I reached all the milestones in my life, have a good career, you know, bought a home in California, you know, but I wasn't happy. You know, I felt like something was missing. And I just knew that for myself was I needed a hard reset of, you know, I want to just live in Vietnam for a year. And that was a promise to myself, right? But living here and now fast forward 4 years now, you know, I'm starting a family here. It's Vietnam has given me so much. And, you know, I don't regret that decision. It was one of the hardest decisions of my life. And through the heritage tour, right? We talk about that. There was a lot of people on the tour where they want to move back. They want to find their purpose. And I think that's like a pattern that we're seeing more and more now with young Vietnamese Americans, you know, Germans, or like, you know, people in France and things like that. People of our diaspora where they're like, man, this place of my nationality is not aligning with what I am or who I am as a person. And I just want to give it a try, you know, moving back and seeing if I can make life really happen here.
What year was your first time?
First time visiting or first time moving?
Visiting Vietnam.
I was actually very fortunate. I was the youngest out of my three brothers, right? So it was easy for my parents to take me out of school. So I came to Vietnam at a really, really early age, like in elementary school, right? My first experience, I hated it, you know, me trying to be like this American kid, you know, really trying to fit in and things like that. I didn't like Vietnam, you know, but as I kept visiting and like this new version of myself, I started appreciating it more. Life was slower. It was more intentional. The community is so strong here, right? And I think that was something I was lacking.
And how did your mom and dad feel about your decision to move?
That was a tough conversation. It was like one of those moments where, why are you giving up everything that you worked hard for or the things that we sacrificed? And this is a conversation that kind of aligns with a lot of people I spoke with. You know, it's that hard conversation, them telling their parents and that disappointment of like, man, I gave up so much for you. You know, you got to go to college, you got to have a good education, you know, you have a stable job, but you know, something was missing. You know, I knew in the heart of it, right, there was something that I needed, and I needed to figure out on my own. And I think that that was like one of the hardest decisions of my life, right? But 1 year turned into a new chapter, turned into a new community that was created with Third Culture Vietnam. You know, I was able to meet my wife, my best friend, my partner, and yeah, I don't regret it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about how you met your wife, because I'm interested in that sort of that dynamic for young men and young women out there. But before I ask that question, when I think about our parents saying, oh, it's a disappointment, because my brother moved there in 2004.
Yeah.
So he's been there for 22 years. Yeah. And he grew up in America just like me, went in the Marines just like me. We were at USC together. We did everything together. And I was the kid who always wanted to be in Vietnam, like as an early, because I was one of the firstborn kids in my family to be, you know, born in the US. So that was 50 years ago. And so when I think about my parents having that feeling of disappointment or very sad about their son, I want to, if other parents are hearing this right now and your kid's like thinking about moving to Vietnam, I'm going to say this. Think about it, reframe it like you worked so hard in your life so your kid can have an opportunity to actually make the decision to move to Vietnam. We are living in a very luxury state right now with the ability to pick up and move and enjoy sort of Vietnam. Of course, nothing is ever perfect, but I think the quality of living in Vietnam, my brother's been there for 22 years, and I challenge anybody to call me up and leave it in the comments about like my brother having a hard life. He's got a great life. And sure, he's got a lot of American attributes, a lot of Western ideas that he brought to, being a professor at RMIT and being a, businessman. I don't know if his quality of life would have been the same here in America in the last 22 years, period.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. The quality of life here is great. But also at the same time, I think there is another aspect to it where if you come to Vietnam and you can't find like a stable job, you can't find your community, or you're coming to Vietnam for other reasons, you're trying to escape something, right? Sometimes it doesn't work out, you know? Even for me, for being 4 years here, I still don't know if the States is going to be the next destination. I don't know if Vietnam's going to be forever. Right. I think that's a conversation that my wife and I would have. But, you know, I'm happy with where I'm at. You know, my apartment's great. We have all the luxuries. But at the same time, I could go across the bridge, go Ba Song Bridge, and boom, I'm in the heart of Vietnam, street food, you know, and you just get a ton of everything. Right. But at the same time, as I think when us Viet Kieus, we move back, right, there's this honeymoon period of the year.
Yeah.
And then after the year, it's like, man, what do I do? You know, how can I find work? Right. Cause the first year is maybe you have like a savings account. You're just burning through it. You're going clubbing. You're having fun. Right. But after the when you start the second year, it's like, okay, what am I doing? Right. And it's hard to kind of find work if you don't have like the right profession. Right. I mean, the backup is what you teach English, you know?
Yeah. So I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast because it just has not come up. But as a Viet Kieu, American man, handsome like you, at the prime of your life, moving to Vietnam and meeting, I'm assuming she's Vietnamese national.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, it. Answer is as comfortable, whatever, if it's not comfortable, just let me know, but as comfortable as you can describe it, because I think a lot of people have this like this preconceived notion about meeting a partner in Vietnam, where to meet somebody in Vietnam, and all of these things might be a misconception. And as one example, is you living through that kind of that cycle of meeting somebody or probably dating and meeting other people in Vietnam. Like, can you tell me what that was like for you?
This wasn't part of the script.
And you know what? I'm not editing either. So I'm just letting you know, it's be careful what you say.
No, let me think about this. Cause I don't want to get in trouble or, you know, say any stigma that's not true. Right. I think for me, just growing up, there's always this like thought of, oh, there's always these older Viet Kieus guys that can't find love in the States and they come back to Vietnam to just find someone to marry. Right. And I always thought that was like such a bad thing, the year that I came back just to experience, live life and just enjoy Vietnam in itself, I was dating, but I wasn't dating for like a purpose of finding a life. Right. But I think when I met her after 3 months of dating, you know, she told me, I'm not going to do long distance with you. And that's when I knew, I was like, hey, I'm going to stay. I want to make this work.
Wow. And,
you know, I think with that is when you know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I met such an amazing person. She's been a great support. Although that we speak mostly in Vietnamese, right? Sometimes there's a language barrier, obviously, right? And there's a lot of things that I really can't express that I want to express, or there's certain words that doesn't translate to Vietnamese or vice versa, right? But we make it work, right? And she's like this strong, independent woman and very Western, open-minded thinking, and very much of what the success of third culture Vietnam is 90% her, you know? There was a part of me in the early stages like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is tough. She's like, no, just stick it through. I think you got something good. And look at the community you created. And I think that that's a credit to her. You know, hopefully she's going to watch your podcast.
She better.
I'll send you the link.
You know, when you have this communication issue of you not having enough words and she's not having enough words, doesn't that strengthen the curiosity of looking for the words and the ideas and strengthen the bond to actually learn more about each other's culture? Or do you guys get lazy and say, yeah, you know, it's just too much?
No, we don't get lazy at all. You know, you have to put in the work. You know, you care about someone and you really want to understand them, you know, make sure they're seen, they're heard, appreciate it. You know, if language fails, I think we find other ways to show that we understand. And it gives me motivation to be better at Vietnamese, right? My progression in the language is not linear. Some days, like, I just feel like I got it down. And some days I'm like, whoa, I just sound like a 3-year-old kid just trying to, you know, really try the language. But, you know, I think that's just part of the process of, like, coming back home and understanding your identity and things like that, and connecting with your roots.
I think you have to be very careful with the way you answer this next question.
Oh, no. Let me take a sip of water before this.
What are some of the cringe traits that you have seen in yourself when you first came back that you see in other Viet Kieu people that come to Vietnam? And I have a list of it because, you know, that was me too. When I first came to Vietnam, that I had, you know, I'll start. My first thing I remember was every time, this was like in the first few three trips, maybe every time I went back, I always had this like, oh my God, but that's not how we do it in America. You know, you would say it out loud, or you would tell your buddies like, this is so weird. Like, we don't do this in America. And that ignorance is like embedded in this, you know, I think America is its own kind of like, you know, we're an island almost, if you think about it, right? We don't, you know, the majority of us don't travel and have passports. I don't know if you know that. The majority of Americans do not have passports and have not traveled abroad. And so you bring this whole culture of, you think that America is the world, but that's like farthest, that's the farthest from the truth. And you start meeting these backpackers in Bu Vinh, and you start meeting all of these like teachers from Australia, Italy, and they sit and they just start to share and talk to you how beautiful Vietnam is. And you're like, wait a minute, I came here thinking that, you know, my culture is superior. So cringy thinking about like me speaking out loud these words now about how, you know, oh, we don't do that here in we don't do that in America. You know, it's so weird to see that. Anyway, I'd love to hear some of the cringe traits that you see. And the reason I ask that is because it helps reframe any expat, not expats, but people who are coming from Viet Kieus, who are coming from America or anywhere else, to really think about what they're saying before they get to Vietnam.
Right. I don't know. This is tough, right? I don't want to rub someone
on toes, yeah.
But I think just coming from America and as a Viet Kieu, right, we come here in a sense of entitlement that someone owes us something, right? Or things need to be done a certain way, or it needs to be fast, like Amazon next day stuff, type of stuff. And I think Vietnam humbled me.
Right?
You know, it's just going to be what it is. Sometimes things don't work out, and, you know, you just have to be patient, right? I mean, that's the only thing I can really think of, right? Things don't go always the right way for me specifically, but it helped me kind of like, hey, America is not the shit, you know?
Yeah.
The life here in Vietnam's a little bit different, right? It's more slow pace. It's more community, right? You make time for your friends. And sometimes, you know, you could just sit on a sidewalk and talk for the entire night. And I think that's such a cool thing. And what we're used to in the States is like, we work 9 to 5, you know, we maybe have our weekends off and we have PTO, maybe we'll do 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
With living in Vietnam, I'm like, my wife and I, we just pick up and go on a vacation, right? We go Southeast Asia and things like that. And life is just better for me right now, you know? But I mean, cringy stuff, I can't really think of anything right off the bat, man.
Without offending people.
Well, I mean, one of the things I've heard recently is like, I'm not going to say any names, but you know, that they think that dating or whatnot, local girls here, it's like, oh, they want something out of you. And I think that's the furthest from the truth. And they're like, oh, these girls just want to date me for my passport. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, America's not that great right now, you know? And I think that's one of the cringy thing when I'm like thinking, like, I don't know.
No, that's a very cringy thing, a very cringy thought, is that a lot of women don't want to leave Vietnam. And I think that the idea of dating a VietQ man has to be reassessed. I think there's a lot of beautiful, strong women, both in America and Vietnam. And I think that I talk about this now, this idea of patriarchy, you know, coming to Vietnam, there's women who are not down with the patriarchy. That it's just not, you know, I think women are growing smarter and moving beyond it. And I think that what we think our passport brings is way off. It's part of this conversation that, you know, I think the new generation of people in Vietnam are like, you know, much more wealthier than we can even imagine. And that's another component.
Absolutely.
So they don't need your passport. They don't need your patriarchy. They don't need what you think that you're bringing to Vietnam. It's a completely different world today.
Dude, my wife is a boss, man. She took me out on dates. She splurged. She bought me a PS5. I'm like, she doesn't need the passport. You know, she has a life here. She's independent. I think that speaks to like the females here, you know, and that stigma or that, you know, what we're thinking, like, hey, we're coming here, we got a passport, girls are gonna just throw themselves at us. No, they don't care, man. I think deep down is they do want a provider, but someone emotionally, someone's there, you know. I don't think it's a finance. Maybe still the case, but I don't think that was the case with me, man.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm going to say this, I think one of the things that we can bring as men is perhaps a new reframing of the way men carry themselves. I think that could be different, right?
Yeah.
Some men from the West are a bit more progressive and enlightened beyond the patriarchy. And I think that's sort of the beauty of being a Vietnamese American man in the new age, which is we don't necessarily need to follow the standards and the practices of our parents' generation, the way they viewed gender roles in marriage.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation, Kenneth. And, you know, we probably very much online on that because I'm entering into fatherhood and we talked about, you know, actually asked you some tips. But what I've been reflecting on is how do I break this cycle of what my dad might have passed down to me, right? And I think we're moving to something deeper, right? Where it's like he tried his best at what he did and what he had, right? And I think for me, or maybe for our generation, is we are the healing generation. We have the opportunity to seek mental health. We have the opportunity to take time off. We have the opportunity to read books, journal. You know, we have our peers to share from. And I think for me, for the past few months, I'm like, man, how do I become a good dad? You know, how do I be there, be present? How do I not pass down these like bad traits, right? And yeah, I think we need to reframe our mindset. We need to reframe our role as a partner, as a husband, as a provider. You know, it doesn't have to be just financially, right? You know, how do we show up every day? You know, and I, yeah.
You know, one thing that I always give to new fathers, especially Vietnamese fathers, new Vietnamese fathers, one thing that I sorely missed and lacked in my perception as I was becoming a new father, and I'd wish somebody had told me, and now that I know it, I tell everybody, and it's because I went through it and I didn't know, and my mother, I'm not going to blame her, but the way we're raised as men is a direct reflection of our men, the way our mother approached raising men. The one, and I say this on this podcast, and I'll always say this, is that less attention to the child needs to happen when you are a first father, first time father. You have to pay attention to your wife.
Yeah.
That priority is to make sure your wife is doing well, is your partner who just gave birth to your child. The entire family is going to take care of that child. The mother is going to take care of the child. Everybody is going to circle around the child. There's so many videos that I've seen online of like white American fathers. They make a beeline straight to their, the fathers of the mother who just gave birth. Your father-in-law, right, would make a beeline straight to his daughter, not to the baby, not to his grandson or granddaughter. You, as a father, I would go straight to my daughter who just gave birth to the kid. I don't need to worry about the baby. And if you now, once your kid comes into the world, you go straight to your wife. Always take care of her for the next, I don't know, 20, 30 years, is take care of your wife first, because you're going to take care of your kid regardless. That's just like built into our genetics, right?
Yeah.
But taking care of our wives and making our wives the priority is the most important thing, is now what I have learned. And you know, it's too late for me. I got a divorce because I just was not aware of that. And that's my fault. Two kids in, you know, I didn't realize, but I was like thinking about my children first. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, what are they, baby machines? And what are they like brought into the world to have your baby? No, it's, you know, they're our partners and our wives, and we have to put them in that's my single most like advice to new fathers. It's like, take care of your wife first. Like, come over to her first. Don't worry about the baby. The baby is going to be fine.
Yeah. And I remember you sharing that with me, and I thank you so much for that lesson, you know, for being vulnerable. And, you know, I think that probably was a tough part in your life, but you were able to, you know, grow from it. And the crazy thing is my wife, she made me do a promise. She's like, hey, after we give birth, right, you check on me first.
Whoa.
You know?
Whoa.
Like I told you, she's the boss, man. And I respect her, you know, for her to tell me like, hey, make sure to check on me first, because she's going through the craziest chapter of her life. Her body's changing. Her identity's changing. I saw the waves, and you know, the best thing I could do is stay at home, be a good boy, right? Clean up the house, just pick up the slack, you know, and just have a rest, because we're not going to understand that, you know? And I don't know if our fathers knew this, right? Or, you know, but
this episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan. The sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows. The feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com. Dude, yeah. Our fathers were out, you know, they were out with the boys. This is why the word third culture, Vietnam, is so important to me. Mm-hmm. What you laid out, and this is why I'm talking about this stuff, actually, because it is a third culture thing. It's not, it's how do we show up as a third culture? And there's so many different ways of it, right? But this is one of the ways is making the realignment of our positions as fathers, husbands, partners in this new third culture. That if we're going to come to Vietnam as VietQ men, then we should be doing this right. We should be doing it correctly. And I'll fight any man to the death about this conversation. Because I lived through it and I failed through it. And I just didn't know, because I'm not blaming my mother. My mother meant the best and she loved me. But she was always like, your kids come first, not your wife. You know, she's like, how backward is that? She used to say to me. And I you know, I've never had a chance to. And, you know, what? There's no reason to correct her anymore at this point, because, you know, it's done. It's all done. But I still try to do my best to, even if she's my ex-wife, try to make sure that I listen and that she's being heard and that I'm a good partner and we have good co-parenting, you know, just to show the kids and be a good person to my ex-wife, you know, because she's done so much and she continues to do so much to bring joy and happiness to my children. And yeah, I wish that I knew this coming up, because, you know, our dad's totally different, and it's not their fault either, right? That's what they knew.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that you're able to share it and you're able to share this advice with the community, because some of us, we don't have that role model. For me, I'm navigating this new chapter of my life of fatherhood, being a husband. I didn't have a good example. Yeah. You know, I don't have a relationship with my dad, you know, but I've forgiven him through my chapter, through my path, through my journey of like understanding my identity. I was able to kind of just come at it with compassion. And understand that, dude, he came to America with nothing, you know, no language, no money, started a whole completely different life. I don't think he had the tools, you know, or the time to be like, hey, I need to be a good father to this kid, right? But now, like, me and you were in our older phase of life where we could share these things, you know, and I think what you do here at, you know, the Vietnamese podcast, it's important. You know, for us to have a voice, for us to share our stories, and for us to listen and learn from one another, right? Yeah.
Let's move into the work that you do at Third Culture Vietnam. And thank you for being open with that last conversation, because I think it's so important to kind of like, you know, begin this conversation, this topic with our community. But now I want to hear about your work at Third Culture Vietnam. How did it get started? What is the engine that moves the financial needle? All of that.
Yeah. And I guess I need to confess, when you first reached out, Kenneth, and invited me, my first thought was, nah, I don't want to do that, you know? And maybe that's weird to say right now, but I think that came from this excuse and things like that. Like, oh, my story is not important. No one's
going to. Wow.
And I sat with it a little where, you know, if I can't be vulnerable, if I can't show up, then how do I expect our community to show up too, right? And it's important to have these voices. I think that's where Third Culture Vietnam started, right? Where it's important to have these communities. And we were very much inspired by what you do, right? You create space for people like us to talk, to have these intentional conversations, these deep, vulnerable, sad stories. I get emotional, obviously, talking about my dad, but I think that I feel comfortable because I watch your stuff. You know, you have your series on things that you wish you'd said to your dad and things like that. And I went through it too, you know? But I think what we do at Third Culture Vietnam is, how do we bridge our experience to Vietnam through tours, through workshops, through events and things like that. And I think the best way to do it is through storytelling. But for me is the main focus is it's not about me. It's about how do we tell the stories of other people, right? And that's very much what you guys do.
You know, when I hear you say that you almost, you know, you consider not doing this, or you're like, why? Where do you think that comes from? This idea that my story is not good enough to share. Like that, where does that initial gut reaction to somebody inviting you to open up about their life and their life story, where does that start?
I think it started at an early age, and we briefly went over where, you know, as this young Vietnamese kid just trying to fit in, trying to be white, you know, where I'm just trying to navigate the space and, you know, your entire life, people have been mispronouncing your name, or they make fun of your food, what you bring to lunch. And, you know, like I mentioned, you begin to internalize it and you begin to accept this reality that you're not, you know, on the same page or on the same playing field as other nationalities, right? And I think for me is it started there, and then the self-doubt happens, right? But now it's like through creating this space and being able to share my stories and listen to others. You know, I found the strength, and that's the beauty of being a third culture kid, right? You have this nationality of being Vietnamese, but also you have your, you know, your identity of being American, German, French, Australian, you know, and hopefully through everyone's like, you know, journey through maturity, right? You could pick the good of both, and that's your superpower, you know, or you could pick the bad qualities of both, and you know, you become a villain. I don't know how to really say
No, that's amazing. Yeah, that's a really good point. You pick the bad and you become a villain. You become the bad guy in the story and the story around other people that you're hanging out with.
Yeah, and we're just repeating that generational trauma, right? And we're just passing it down to our kids. And I think for me is, how do I just pick the good qualities of both worlds that I've been able to, you know, mature in and be a man, you know?
You know, I want to put a spotlight on the work that you do, the work that people at Vietcetera do, like Thuy Minh with Have a Sip and Viet Success and Viet Boss Babes and all the people on the podcast and all this entertainment media space, social media. When I listen to some of these podcasts in Vietnamese, entirely in Vietnamese, I learn the language even deeper. Like when I listen to Have a Sip from Thuy Minh, I think about how wholesome the stories that are coming out of like these 70-year-old people, these like 60-year-old people that, you know, grew up in Vietnam, speak entirely Vietnamese and are doing major work in their fields. And I think about how wholesome and whole Vietnam is. And they're not even, they don't even take a minute to like figure out their identity because they are what they are, right? And I do have cultural envy when I think about people in their 70s and 80s being so complete and whole in their language skills, in their, you know, their identity, you know. Do you think that is ever going to be who you and I are? That we are cemented in third culture-ness? Or do you look to kind of like grow into becoming and morphing into a Vietnamese person?
That's tough because it depends on where you're at physically, right? In Vietnam, I could be that. I could be this Vietnamese person, right? And I feel it every day, right? But if my wife and I, we plan to move back to the States, that could be totally different, right? We're just put in this place where we should be placed, right? And you guys are just Vietnamese American, right? I don't know. You know, that's a tough question. I think the third culture in us is just always going to be cemented in us. And this is a thought that I have with my future boy, you know? I don't know how life is going to be for him, but I hope it's easier, you know, with the platforms that's created, you know, the Vietnamese podcast, what Thuy Minh's doing, et cetera, what overseas Vietnamese is doing, you know, and what VietQ Media is doing. Shout out to Johnny, right?
Shout out to Dan and Johnny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we're creating this platform where it's okay to be Vietnamese, you know, and it's okay to be, you know, you're proud of your culture, and it's cool, right? And I see that trending, and it's awesome seeing like young Vietnamese of our diaspora being able to speak up about their stories, right? And one other person that's speaking up is Jason at Wing Dynasty.
Oh, great. Man.
I love that guy.
I literally talked about him in another podcast. I didn't know his name at the time. I was like bringing it up and somebody said, yeah, it's Jason. Woo, that kid is on fire.
Right. And it inspires me to keep doing what we're doing at Third Culture Vietnam. And, you know, it's more than one person. This is a community. This is our diaspora. This is the overseas Vietnamese. And I think it was a cool opportunity that you invited me and that both brands could work together. Because, you know, why are we going to compete, right? I think we're like at a disadvantage already just being like Third Culture 100%. Vietnamese, right?
Let me speak to that now. Let me speak to that competition. I say this all the time to everybody. If I can have 50 people like you and me, I have 50 lily pads to hop on to their shows. I have 50 more people to amplify the beauty of Vietnam, to the power of Vietnam. If I had 50 people or 100 people or 200 people who had microphones and had platforms, I'd be busy surfing podcasts all day on people's shows. Yeah. You know, when I started, there was nobody. It was just like nobody I can like go on to shows and, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, thank God. There's like all these guys, Chris Trent Travels, you know, Third Culture Vietnam and overseas, and everybody's like popping up with podcasts. Even if you had a podcast for just 1 year or 6 months, and it lived and you didn't take it down off the platforms and you just let it live and people can kind of like archive it and it's still a lily pad that we can jump onto. And I say it all the time. If anybody has any questions, please reach out to me, leave it in the comments. You know, I will walk you through how this is done and, you know, build a community because I think it's so important. If I've seen a lot of people who started out much later than me who grew big numbers, you know, Tang Wing, the Ao Yai designer, you know, started his podcast like a year ago, you know, much later than me. And, you know, he's like up to like 120,000 followers on his, following count. And I think and Ty was on my podcast a few times and, you know, having that kind of amplification in our culture is priceless because as we are growing and we are believing in ourselves a lot more, these different satellite divisions of Vietnamese people is like, it's key to blowing up, future music acts and films and things that need to be moved into the mainstream of the world, not just America, but mainstream world.
Can I add on to that, though? Would you think that you are the pioneer, like the OG that like set the flame to this?
You know, in the spirit of just not being humble, yes. Right? That I'm just in the spirit of that. Yes. Okay.
For me to be fully transparent, this is you were the first Vietnamese style format of podcast that I listened to and that I guess is a testament to the success of the people that came after is, you know, what you laid down, right? Regardless if they jumped up to like 100K followers or whatnot, I think it started from what you created, the platform you created, the people you spoke with. And like I told you, a lot of your stuff, it did inspire what we do at Third Culture Vietnam. So I appreciate what you do. Keep doing what you do. You know, you are doing amazing work.
Doubt. Thank you. I appreciate the kind words. But I do want to, you know, also bring up the fact that Thuy Minh started her podcast September 2020. I started October 2020. So we started a month apart, Vietcetera, how from Vietcetera had asked her to come on to the team. So we all started, her and I started at the same time. So she's an OG in the Vietnamese language space, and I'm the OG in the English language space. But I am not really the OG. When I think about the OGs, I think about, there's Randy Kim over Banh Mi Chronicles, who started out a year before I did. And then there is Tracy, who started Vietnam Boat People. It's a refugee podcast. So those two actually started a year before I did. So, you know, when it comes to sort of like talking about the pioneer, I just put out a whole lot more content than my predecessors, Randy and Tracy, because they were doing things very, you know, they edit, they take time, they really, and my format's just different, which is no editing. It's just hit record and then let it rock, right? Yeah. So in that way, that kind of like long form podcast was very different from what Tracy and Randy were doing. And so I just want to give credit where credit is due. And they inspired me as well to keep the mantle going. And now that we have all these new creators, you know, I am like Wind Dynasty, Jason over there. You know, I'm going to have to get him on the podcast soon because his storytelling is like on point. I love what he's doing. And thanks for bringing him up.
Yeah, well, we have weekly video call meetings with each other. He's a dope young man.
And he left Vietnam when he was 10 or something, right?
Yeah, so his story is cool, man. And then him like just finding his way back and being proud and accepting his Vietnamese-ness, regardless of him being like third culture, maybe you could break that. I don't know.
Tell me about your heritage tours.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think it's the best business model financially, but it's a tour created by us, for us. And we cap it at 12. We want to keep it very intimate, intentional, right? And there's a vetting process. There's times where I've told people like, hey, this is not your tour, you know?
Whoa, can you stop right there? Can you tell me exactly what will prevent you from bringing somebody on?
Oh man, this is where I might get in trouble. So we wanted to create a space for people like us to come back to Vietnam in an intentional way, right? Regardless if you don't have a connection with Vietnam, you've never been, or if you've been there many times, but you want to come back where you're just around people with the same questions, right? They want to share, they want to listen. And for me specifically is I don't feel comfortable just having a non-Vietnamese person or someone of the diaspora on the tour, you know? The funny thing is one of the submissions that we have for March was, Norman, I don't know if I can say this, she said, I don't want to join the tour if there's a white person on the tour. Very
fair. That's fair. That's very fair. Your platform says third culture. Doesn't, you know, it's like, it's fair.
Even our profile says by us for us, right? And I want to keep it that way. And I was inspired growing up by the brand FUBU. Maybe that's our age, right? For us, yes, but I flipped it, right? Where it's Vietnamese. And I want to have a Vietnamese team, right? And when we think about creating this space of coming back to Vietnam and visiting, what does it mean coming back home, right? And then how can we come back home together? And that's where we kind of started, right? And the logistics came in, the itinerary came in, but how do we pick these places but create an atmosphere where people like us could share our stories? We could journal, you know, there's prompts and things like that. It's a very meaningful, emotional tour. You know, and the connections you make is just like beyond any other tour company. And I'm not trying to do a pitch, right? we had two heritage tours already, one in July and we just finished one in March. These people became my lifelong friends. Like we kind of see each other in a way that no one else understands. Right. We share things about our parents. We share things about like generational trauma, things that we're trying to like let go of. Right. And we also share like how can we be better parents, partners and things like that, similar to what you and I were talking about. Right. These are the spaces that's very important. And we try to incorporate that into a trip, a tour, you know, an experience back to Vietnam, right?
Are there other things that prevent you from bringing somebody on? And I think it's important to talk about what, because I deal with this idea of inclusion and exclusion all the time.
Yeah.
Right? That's a hard thing, because if you're not excluding people, then the people that you are including, what kind of experience are you really giving them? Right? Like, the premise of your work really revolves around this idea of third culture. And I think that if you do bring in non-Vietnamese people or people who are not part of the diaspora, you know, you're watering down the experience and it just becomes a regular tour, right? It's not really a heritage tour for the people that are on this tour.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. From a financial standpoint, it'll be great. Yeah, we'll take everyone, you know? But just thinking back, as this is something that I wish that was around when I was a kid, this experience where I'm able to come back to Vietnam, explore the North, Central, South, go to these cities, learn from these artisans and things like that, but be around people that just look like me, sound like me, have the same concerns, right? And then the reflective circles, like something's much deeper, right? Where it gets emotional. People cry and things like that. And I think that's important for us to show up for one another and be vulnerable.
Do you ever think about opening it up to a more general tour and not so specific?
I don't know.
Creating another program entirely.
Maybe in the future, but right now I think this is what's important to me. I think it's what's important to our community. And I think it's a space that a lot of us really want, you know, but we don't get the opportunity to have in this world, right? Where, you know, I think sometimes inclusion is a great breeding ground for us to kind of just be vulnerable and, you know, kind of just let go. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to be judged. And I can share this with you, right? And I trust you and you're going to hold it and you're going to listen to it. And I think that's important. But I mean, just to share also, is the July tour, we had someone that wasn't Vietnamese. He was Tongan American, right? But the reason why he wanted to join us, he is in healthcare. I'm not going to say his name, but shout out if he listens, right? But he wanted to help his patients. Most of his patients are Vietnamese. Mm. And his language skills, speaking Vietnamese, is better than mine. And I was so shocked, but also it reminded me, I was like, I need to be more proud of my heritage because he took on our culture, right? And even for our March tour, we had someone that was from Singapore. He's learning Vietnamese. He's coming back to Vietnam. And he even said on the first day, like, even though I'm the only person that's not Vietnamese on this tour, I feel it in my blood, you know? I think there is exceptions, right? And that's why we have like this form, the vetting process, because, you know, it's important to create this space.
Since you've only done two, can you walk me through the idea, the premise before you did number one, and then how it changed to go to number two, and then what is changing and evolving as you're planning and thinking about the third one?
I think the first one just came with the, I mean, it's not a simple question, right? But it's, what does it mean to come home? As I mentioned before, and then how do we come home together? And how do we make it a different type of tour where you're not just going to a destination, you're not just trying good food, you're not taking photos and posting on Instagram or whatnot, you know? It's how do we make this trip where they take more home, that's something like meaningful, and it kind of changes your life, right? And just moving forward is, how do we keep creating that space where it just feels safe, you know, and that people like us could have these conversations and come back to their normal life, wherever they're landing, right? And be better, right? Feel better, be more clear, and kind of just have this weight lifted off where you're not the only person that's going through this. You're not the only person that feels like you're not fitting in, or why am I trying to be a certain, you know, nationality, right? I think that's what we're trying to focus on for future tours, is how do we keep creating these experiences where people show up for one another, you know, and just remind each other that there's more than one way to be Vietnamese, right? There's no right or wrong way. You know, I think we're just trying our best and just creating the space where we could share these stories and be vulnerable. I think that's just powerful in itself, right?
And lastly, tell me about the, I think you have meetups too, right? You have a community that you've built because, you know, you look on your Instagram page and you know, there's all kinds of things happening beyond the Heritage Tour.
Yeah, I mean, we do year-round Saigon tours, but, you know, for Saigon, 4 hours, there's not much you can do that it's deep, right? So what we're trying to create is for people that can't join our Heritage Tour, whether it's too long or it's too expensive, right? We want to create more workshops, identity workshops, small spaces where people that local Vietnamese can join, but also people that are, you know, VQs like me living in Vietnam, you know, how do we kind of just create a space where we can share these stories? You know, I mean, similar to what you're doing, Vietnamese podcast, but we're trying to create a group and just like let each other know it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to show up as you are, imperfect, you know, having these deep questions that you've been asking yourself your entire life, right? And I think for us is, you know, you're seen, you're heard, I got you, you know, you don't have to carry this alone. And, you know, just understanding your identity, your culture is just, it's a lifelong journey. And I don't think I'll ever totally figure that out.
Dal, thank you so much for sharing and spending the time and agreeing to come on to the podcast. I know that you had reservations initially, and I'm glad that you overcame it. And I look forward to many, many, many more years of, you know, either collaboration or conversation or any type of connection that we can put out into the world and show that the Vietnamese community has unity. And I know it's not perfect. I know there's trauma and there's hurt all everywhere that you look and turn. And we have history with each other's. And, you know, when you dig deep into each one of our relationships with each other, there's all kinds of scars. But I hope that we can continually grow and do better in our partnerships. And again, thank you for coming on to the podcast today.
Yeah, and I thank you for the opportunity for, you know, giving me a way to kind of step out of my comfort zone and then just reminding me that, you know, it is okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to share your stories, you know, whether you think it's, you know, anyone cares or not, right? But I think it's important that what we're doing and where we're at in our life, that we do share our mistakes. You know, we do share about our relationships with our family, you know, our parents, or even our relationship with Vietnam, you know, and hopefully through these stories, you know, we're able to kind of heal and become better. Yeah. So I appreciate what you're doing. Keep doing it. And hopefully we could, you know, do some great stuff together.
Yeah. And vice versa, you know, vice versa. I think that you're doing a great job, and we will continue to have discourse and conversation. And hit me up whenever you have anything that, you know, you want to put out there. You know, I'm happy to amplify you, or if you have other podcasters that are coming up that doing good work, just let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to hit you up for fatherhood tips. So
yeah, be ready. Anytime. All right. Thanks a lot, Dal.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.